future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Quit it now!
Alvarez, driven, right center field, and deep, and gone! Alvarez! Take that, hit probability! That's a two-run blast and a 6-4 Astros lead.
That ball's crushed. Down the right field line and gone. Into the bleachers above the Chop House. Yordan Alvarez. A two-run home run gives the Astros a 2-1 lead.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the bullpen with myself, Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes from the Paul Gallant Show, and RJ Saunders from the bench. Fellas, it has been a while since all the three of us have been in studio. We actually figured it out before the show. March 12th was the last time the three of us were in studio with our man Josh behind the glass. There's a stained gif out there that somewhere reflects upon how long it's been since we've been able to do this. So coming in, we heard the home runs from Yordan Alvarez, back-to-back days with two-run jacks the last a bit of audio courtesy of AT&T Sportsnet from Todd Callis. Not giving credit to the highlight before because that call of the hit probability
was not great. Take that for data.
Take that for data. Apple TV, their broadcasts of Major League Baseball games, not the best.
They're figuring it out. How many years
in the
baby stages.
Yeah.
Well, last year. And now this year. That's the sophomore season.
Sophomore season. Okay. I'm going to expect some sort of tick up here at some point.
By year three, they have it figured out.
Year three, maybe.
I don't know. Year three is hasty.
I don't think you guys sound very optimistic of that. So we're going to get into the Astros here in the opening segment later in the show. We're going to get into a lot of NFL draft topics, including Cody Stutes from the Wheelhouse joining us at 10:45. In the second hour, we actually have some Rockets topics and a whole lot more. But let's start here again with the Astros. I think the most meaningless thing in sports is the Astros' record at 11-10. By the way, their record after 21 games last year, 11-10. And this Astros team, after the slow start, has now won back-to-back series against the Braves and the Blue Jays, two World Series contenders. Your overall thoughts on what we've seen from the Astros this week, Sean?
The Astros are back, folks.
I hope that's more meaningful than a certain other college football team saying they're back.
No, okay. Yes, of what you pointed out with the records, it's staggering. I think there's been like five different times this season where their record has like perfectly matched up with the record is last year.
I believe I saw when they were 6-7.
Yeah,
they had been 6-7 each of the previous two seasons.
That's what it was. And so this really is just business as usual for the Astros. Now they're actually winning, so that's nice. That makes everyone kind of cool off a little bit once you start taking two out of three, like you said, against really good teams, and they have some more really good teams coming up. Their schedule coming up.
Yeah, they've got the Phillies coming up. I'm forgetting who else is up after that.
There might be Mariners coming up.
Yeah, so there's some really good teams on the schedule coming up. But, RJ, what's been your reaction from the last week of Astros bet play?
I've loved hearing listeners and us kind of, as fans as a team, where it's, the team wins one, team loses one. There really hasn't been any sort of consistency with the team. So that was something that Dusty Baker talked about, I think, after the loss that they had against the Rangers, where it was, we have a great game one night, and then the next night we don't have as great of a game. I think right now, I think you said, Patrick Creighton said it, it's far too early to, be concerned about the team.
Yeah, we're 21 games into 162 games
at this stage of the season. So right now, for me, it's kind of like I feel like the Astros are on course to have a real good season. There's nothing to worry about, at least right now. I mean, you see the Angels, they're up there. You see the Rangers, they're looking really good. But
I don't have any confidence in them sustaining it.
Yeah, they're going to sustain that, no. And then the Astros are going to have, one great run probably next month or next 2 months. And then it's like Sean said, Astros baseball is back.
Yeah, the thing with the Rangers look good, and X team X that we thought was bad looks good, and this Well, if you buy into the fact that the Astros are not actually an 11-10 team, you can't also then buy in already to the Texas Rangers are going to be good this year. Yeah. Look at their record.
Yeah, if you
games.
Don't buy into a record after 21 games for the Astros,
on the
then
good side, or on the bad side,
right.
you can't buy
you
it
also,
in on the good side.
Yeah. And I think the most encouraging thing for me this week has just been the pitching. Luis Garcia has been someone who has really struggled this season. A lot of talk in the offseason about, you know, getting rid of the Rockabye Baby throw, to, you know, his motion there and how that would affect him, the pitch clock and all that. All he does is go out on Wednesday against Toronto, one of the best offenses in all of baseball. Seven innings, only allows three base runners, no runs, nine strikeouts. If Luis Garcia, I mean, obviously he's not going to pitch seven inning shutouts every night out. Yeah. But if Luis Garcia is back to someone who can give you a mid-3 ERA, this totally changes what we think of the rotation going forward.
And this rotation, it was a bunch of guys. I mean, we saw it at the start of the season where they're all kind of bumped up a spot from where they've been in years
losing
past.
Verlander, everyone had to take a step up.
And, you know, now Fromber's the number one guy. Yeah. He's never been that in the rotation.
Right.
It's going to take some time to adjust being the ace. Same with Christian Javier. Same thing with Luis Garcia. The Astros are asking more out of these guys.
Yeah.
And the first three starts or however many of the year, they're figuring out. Now it feels like, especially with Garcia, he's kind of feeling more comfortable in that role of being the number two or number three on this team.
And Framber Valdez, I mean, he was obviously great last year. I believe he was – I knew he was top five in Cy Young. I can't remember exactly what his finish was.
Fourth or fifth.
But this year his ERA is even lower than last year. He's 2.25 compared to 2.82 last season. And he's given up fewer walks per nine and striking out more batters per nine. Yeah.
How many quality starts?
I'm not sure where he's at on that list yet. But are you comfortable with Fromber going forward, RJ, as the absolute ace, no doubt, of this team?
Absolutely. I think that's what you were trusting him to be. Also, I mean, when you look at guys like Hunter Brown, you put a lot of faith in. In the rotation, you're also putting a lot of faith also in Christian Javier as well. Like Sean said, I mean, everybody's kind of been bumped up and you're trusting these guys in spots. And one big thing that, you know, we would talk about, or at least I would when we were all together, was depth was going to be a big thing for the Houston Astros and trying to do this by committee. And, you know, Altuve goes out during the WBC and, you know, he'll be back either later this month or sometime next month.
Probably June.
Yeah. You know, according to Dana Brown. But now look at guys that are stepping up. Guys like Corey Jolts. I mean, where did this guy
go
come
Cougs.
From?
Yeah, now Houston, you know now that's where he came from.
Right.
I mean, but he came from here.
You know, it's kind of
like
exactly
Colin Boulevard.
It's, you know, he's a rookie, and you know, you may have not thought that he would have seen significant time, but with the time that he's had, he's doing a tremendous job. Fromber's doing a tremendous job as well. Abreu is now seeming to come into his own here.
Steamer hit home runs, man.
That's what everybody's asking for. But he's doing everything else.
He's hitting for average. He's driving in runs.
Now everybody's asking for him to drive in runs. And Fromber, no different. Fromber's really stepped up since Verlander's been out. And he's shown that he's going to be, you know, a big-time asset and the ace for this Astros team. So everybody's doing real well right now.
And Mauricio Dubon.
I was just going to go to that on Sean. So Dubon's
I also see the run.
You can see it. 16-game hitting streak. He's hitting .333 for the season, .348 over that 16-game hitting streak. I mean, obviously when Altuve comes back, you would expect Dubon to lose some playing time. Maybe he gets in the center field rotation after that. But, I mean, how long do you think this could last with Dubon? Is there something that's changed in him, or is this something fluky? Where are you at with Dubon?
I mean, Chandler Rome had a story when he moved over to The Athletic, which I am subscribed to, not to brag. And
that is a shot to RJ and I, who are not
pre-show,
paid for it. Yeah.
Pre-show discussion that had no
shots
place
fired.
In the air. And Chandler was talking about how Mauricio and Yordan are very tight in the Astros clubhouse, and they play dominoes, and they talk about hitting together. And there's very few people on the planet I would want to talk hitting with more than Yordan Alvarez. Yordan Alvarez, I feel like, could teach you a few things when it comes to hitting. So I think that is definitely rubbing off on him. I think this can be maybe not, you know,
he's not going to hit .348 over the season.
Yes, but there is improvement to his game. He's still young enough to where that can be the case. And, I think that when Altuve comes back, you can either throw him into the outfield rotation, or you could even get creative with the, you know, how Dusty with the off days.
He could get a fill-in at short. He could get a fill-in at second base, wherever.
Yeah, second base and have Altuve, DH, and Brantley and Yordan in left field. One in left field, one – well, both of them in left field would be nice. But one in left field, one with the day off.
That's a bold strategy. Put two people in left field. I don't know why anyone hasn't tried that yet.
Just look in the rule book. See if anything's in there.
You mentioned something that I thought was funny. But going back to your show, the Paul Gallant Show, I was listening. You mentioned Domino's. And I was listening the other day when Paul admitted on air that he had no idea there was an actual game with Domino's. Wow. He thought the only use for Domino's were to knock them over.
He did clarify that's what he thought in like high school or college. Like when he got to college, he learned that there's an actual domino game, not just. And I asked him, like, well,
how
what
old
do you
were you when you realized dominoes were a game?
What do you think the dots are for?
that's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, why would I guess decoration? No. One more note before we get out to break. Brian Abreu, I was mentioning this to RJ before the show started, but the dude is just, we know he's great. Right. We know he's unhittable, but when you look at some of the stats, it's jaw-dropping. He's only given up one earned run this season over 11 1/3. 11 and third innings pitched in the postseason, zero earned runs allowed. Going back to last July 16th, 2022, from that point to October 5th through the end of the regular season last season, only two earned runs over that time span. So we're talking 51 innings going back to July 16th with only four earned runs allowed. I mean, I know Ryan Pressly's the closer, I think, but I mean...
Abreu's the guy you trust the most.
Yeah, like if we get to the postseason and it's a one-run lead, I mean, who do you want to go to? It's Abreu, right?
I think Abreu is perfectly suited for the either setup eighth inning guy or the like high leverage guy, like we saw.
He came into a bases loaded situation and didn't allow anyone to score.
I think his position on the team could be just clean up Montero's mess if push comes.
I don't know. So I don't know if you want it all the time like that.
So much money. Feel bad for Brian.
Like you're
going
to keep throwing Montero out there. You need a plan. Yeah, you need a guy. What happened?
Yeah, yeah. Brian Abreu's role is the Montero cleanup man, the piggyback guy. All right, we got to get to break. Coming up next on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, we turn our attention to the NFL draft, which is now finally, thankfully, less than a week away, starting this Thursday in Kansas City, which, by the way, the Wheelhouse will be out there, so make sure you tune in this week. And we'll ask the question, if the Texans did blank, how would we react? That's next. It's the Bullpen with Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and RJ Saunders here on ESPN Radio 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the Bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, Brian McDonald with you here. And if you have any reaction to anything we're talking about today, whether it be the Astros, their domination of the Braves and the Blue Jays over the last week, or anything we're talking about coming up here in the next couple segments with the NFL draft, please give us a call, 713-780-3776. That's 780-ESPN. That's the HRMP listener line. And we will get your thoughts. Anything Astros, anything Texans, and we're even talking Rockets coming up next hour. So give us a call. But right now, and again, Cody Stutes from the Wheelhouse joining us at 1045 to talk NFL draft. But let's get into some NFL draft conversation right here with kind of a there's so many mock drafts out there. I mean, it feels like, every day everyone's refreshing their mock drafts. I don't know how many. I think Mel Kiper's on his fourth one, but some guys I've seen are like on their seventh or eighth at this point.
One thing about the mock drafts, why do they call them mock draft 1.0, 2.0, 3.0? Like, there's never a 2.1.
Right.
They made one slight change. This is Lion King 2.5. Like they never use the decimal.
No. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, they should just be 1, 2, 3. There's really no reason for the decimal. I mean,
they should put it on Roman numerals like the Super Bowl. Anyway,
no, yeah. you lost me there. You lost me there, Sean.
I mean, if you're gonna, never mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Go on with this.
We're getting way too nerdy here. Let's get into some of these mock drafts and basically ask the question, because there's 1,000 mock drafts. It feels like there's 1,000 scenarios matching what the Texans will do. No one seems sure. It feels like, there's a third of the people talking about how they're not going to take a quarterback at all. There's some people that think they'll take C.J. Stroud, and there's 1,000 different trade down or even trade-up scenarios possibly that people have been discussing. So let's kind of go through a couple of mock drafts here, and we'll probably carry it over to the next segment as well and just ask the question, if the Texans do this, whatever happens in this mock draft, how will we react the following week here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5? What will the phone lines look like if the Texans actually do this? Let's start with Jonathan Jones from CBS Sports. He has, and these first few are all kind of trade-up scenarios, and that's kind of, I think, some of the more interesting ones just because it takes so many more variables to actually make it happen. But Jonathan Jones from CBS has the Texans taking C.J. Stroud at 2 and then trading up from 12 to 10 to take Tyree Wilson. RJ, if the Texans take Stroud and then Tyree Wilson, how are you feeling the next Monday?
I'm feeling okay. I don't know how the rest of Houston's going to feel, just because there's been so much of this. It'll be a stretch if the Texans take C.J. Stroud and then Tyree Wilson. You know, is he that good of a player, or is he a guy that's going to need some time to be able to mature and become that defensive guy that we think he's going to be? I would be fine with it, just because I know when we were on, we talked a lot about drafting a quarterback at 2. So I feel like you'll have that, you know, spot solidified. And if you want to take the best, or who you feel is the best defensive player, you know, at the 10 or the 12 spot, if they were there.
Consensus second best pass rusher, I think, from what I've seen on most boards, with Will Anderson being number one. Sean, how would you feel about that, those selections?
I feel pretty good. I would want to see the draft compensation. I'm looking at the mock draft to see if Mr. Jones.
Yeah, he does. They don't list, from what I've seen, they don't list what they would take. I would guess if you're trading up 2 spots, you probably avoid giving up a future first. You're talking about losing maybe, you know, a third, maybe like this year's third and a future third. I think it could be something like that. If let's say it is that. Let's say it's this year's third and a future third. Would you be okay with that to secure Tyree Wilson and probably the two biggest needs on the team? I mean, obviously quarterback's number one, but pass rusher's probably number two. I mean, if Tyree Wilson's the guy, if C.J. Stroud's the guy, you wouldn't care about giving up 2/3 if you nail down their two biggest needs, right?
Yeah, when you put it like that, that definitely makes – man, are you running PR for Casario? Like, yeah, you know what? Now I'm on board. Now that sounds good. Yeah, no, I definitely think – and I'm just looking at who goes after him. It's Paris Johnson, Bijan, Broderick Jones, Darnell Wright. So no one that you really feel like you're missing. I mean, JSN at 15 on this mock is the next.
I think that would be the big question. In this scenario, if they go Tyree, if they trade it up from 12 to 10 and take Tyree Wilson, the biggest question would be, did they give up the opportunity to, well, of course they gave it up because they took someone else, but are you okay with them giving up the opportunity to pair Stroud with his college teammate, Jaxon Smith-Njigba?
I think I'm okay with that.
All right, let's move on to the next scenario. This is also from CBS Sports, Chris Trapasso, with maybe, I think, the craziest scenario that I've seen so far with a Texans trade-up here at the NFL draft. So he also has the Texans taking C.J. Stroud at number 2, and then chaos unleashed. He has the Texans trading up and taking the very next pick, trading up from 12 to 3 to take Will Anderson 3rd overall. I mean,
that's going to be 2 first, right?
Obviously, if I just ask you, are you okay with them having C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson? The answer is yes. So that's absolutely, not the question. Yeah. The question is, what would you be willing to give up if you were to make this trade happen, Sean? Would you be willing to? I mean, obviously, it's going to cost you at least 1 first. At least one, the pick swap, you know, from 3 to 12, and then 1 additional first at least.
So Trapasso puts in the mock trade. So the Cardinals would move this pick to the Texans for 12, number 65, and 1 of Houston's 2 first-round picks next year.
That's not bad.
That's not bad.
I mean, I think I'll do it. He said the one from Cleveland, too.
Yeah, I mean.
Although, next year, you'd hope that that's not that big of a deal, but
You would think if
as long as they keep 1 pick for next year, I'm fine with. I like this. Good job, Chris. This is a great trade. You get the best pass rusher in the draft, and you get the number 2 quarterback in the draft. I think people would be ecstatic. Like, going back to the question of how the city. Texans fans, they would go nuts. We'd all be making the same Kevin Costner draft day jokes. Yeah. Like, it would be great. That part wouldn't be great. But the fact that they have these 2 guys on the team would be great.
I think that would make sense to me on the fact of the Texans do have the draft capital to do something like this.
Right.
So, you know, you ultimately, at some point in time, and I've been arguing this about the Rockets as well, at some point you do want to get off some of those picks. You don't want to draft high every year. You want to try to take that big swing and get guys that can help your team immediately. And if you do that to get Will Anderson, he's going to help your team immediately. There's guys that feel like he's, you know, just going to be a great talent and a terror on the defensive end in the NFL. And then also you get the second best quarterback in the entire NFL draft, according to some. And yeah, I think Texans fans would be like, we're back, guys. We're back. Here we go. This is where it all turns around for us. So I would definitely do it if I was in the front office.
I mean, looking at the likelihood of it, obviously it feels pretty low.
Unlikely.
But if you're telling me the only compensation you're giving up is this year's third, when you still have another you basically have another first round pick with the 33rd overall pick, or kind of like a first round pick, and then a future first when you also have another first round pick next year, it's a no brainer. I mean, I don't think it's happening. But yeah. If this is the package, if this gets offered to you, Nick Caserio should race to accept as quickly as he could.
And I was going to do the thing about, who's next on the clock? Like, who they pass up on? I mean, they traded for the third overall pick, and they made the second overall pick. So everyone except for Bryce Young and CJ Stroud are still on the board at three.
Yeah.
And Will Anderson would be someone that I think everyone would be excited for.
Yeah. All right, let's carry over this conversation. We got a few more mock drafts to discuss. Kind of get our reaction to, again, if the Texans did this, how would we feel? All that coming up next on The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 with myself, Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real, fun sports. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is The Bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio. Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, myself, Brian McDonald, our man Josh behind the glass. And let's pick up the conversation we were having before the break. On different scenarios the Texans could find themselves in this upcoming NFL draft, which starts on Thursday in Kansas City. Again, the Wheelhouse will be out there in Kansas City, so make sure you tune in to those and hear those guys' reaction to what's going on Thursday and Friday. And again, Cody Stutes from the Wheelhouse coming up next segment, 10:45. If you have any reaction to what we're discussing here, give us a call. The HRMP listener line is 713-780-3776. So we talked about a few scenarios in the last segment. Let's move on to Michael Renner from Pro Football Focus. And I think this one is a scenario, it's another trade, but it's a scenario that's going to have Texans fans feeling a little bit differently than the last trade that we discussed, which was the Texans taking Stroud and then trading up from 12 to 3 to take Will Anderson, the pass rusher from Alabama. In this scenario, the Texans, according to Michael Renner from Pro Football Focus, would be trading down from 2 to 6 with the Lions to take Tyree Wilson, and then following that up by sticking and picking at 12 with Jaxon Smith-Njigba, the Ohio State wide receiver. So passing on quarterback with their first two picks. RJ, if this is what happens on draft night, we're going to have a lot of angry callers, you think, on Monday, right?
Absolutely. Who's your quarterback? Unless you're saying that you're going to, you know, have Davis Mills, you know, we're going to throw Davis Mills out there. We're going to try it again. We're going to run it back with Davis Mills. And you get Tyree Wilson, who I think is probably a D'Amico guy. I think D'Amico probably feels like, you know, this is going to be a guy who's going to be really good years down the line for the Texans. And then you get possibly the best receiver in the draft in Jaxon Smith-Njigba. But who's throwing to him? And I think that's going to be a huge issue for a lot of Texans fans. I know it would be an issue for myself for a team that, you know, you're just so unsure about what they're going to do at quarterback at this moment in time before the draft. So I wouldn't like this one too much if you're going to trade down to get a defensive player. I mean, I'd rather take Will Anderson with the second pick if you want to go defense with your first overall pick.
Yeah, I agree with RJ there. If you want to go, if you want to sell me that this quarterback draft class is one quarterback deep, it's Bryce Young, and then you don't like anybody else, after that, I mean, I might be able to talk into trusting D'Amico's evaluation. But if that's the case, why not just take Will Anderson right. at 2 and then JSN at 12? Sean, your thoughts on this scenario?
Don't like it.
I think that's going to be unanimous, yeah.
Don't enjoy this. No, I mean, I'm looking at this. So with the sixth pick, the Texans get Tyree Wilson. I think what RJ says, right? I mean, any defensive player that they get, I think, will have – immediate buy-in, just as like, oh, D'Amico likes him.
Yeah.
And D'Amico so far hasn't missed on anything because he hasn't really made any decisions. But everyone, D'Amico, if D'Amico likes the guy, it means it'll work out, which fine.
Yeah, like Carmelo Hayes, when he shoot, he don't miss. He's like, yeah, only one person in the studio got that reference.
Only one person in the city got that reference. with the sixth pick, they picked Tyree Wilson, but they do pass on Christian Gonzalez, a corner out of Oregon. I realize they're not going to get a corner.
Yeah, I don't really care about that.
I would like any corner. But then the Falcons at 8 stick and pick, and they get Anthony Richardson. I think that's where the discussion would come from of like, wait, we drafted Tyree Wilson over a quarterback, and then double down on still not a quarterback and getting JSN at 12, which – and then I would be upset that they didn't get Devin Witherspoon out of Illinois. I really like him, and he was available at 17 on this draft.
So I think that's the – you hit on the Anthony Richardson topic. I don't think anyone in the city would, besides Jeremy Branham, would be upset if they passed on Will Levis. I mean, obviously, there'll be some hindsight if Will Levis turns out to be a great quarterback, and then everyone will – throw their hands up in the air with
there'll be no uproar.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But I know talking with Josh yesterday while we were running the Dynamo game, I think he's sold on Anthony Richardson as even being the pick at number 2. He's nodding his head. That's what he would do. So, I mean, where are you at with it? I know we fawned over Anthony Richardson after the combine where he set all sorts of records, the best quarterback to do this since 2009, the fastest time here, the highest jump there. Yeah. Presumably Bryce Young off the board, would you take Sean Anthony Richardson or two?
I've come around. I would take a shot on him just because you look at the upside on that, and the upside's like out of the park, amazing. And when you look at the AFC, you're gonna have to beat Pat Mahomes. You're gonna have to beat Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Herbert. Like, you're going to need an A-plus quarterback. You can't throw a game manager out there. You're going to need to walk out there with, like, your own badass. Yeah. So, Anthony Richardson, I think, has the shot of being the guy who fits in with that group out of anyone in this draft. He has the talent, the untapped potential to get to that level. And so, for that reason, I'm like, Why are we doing C.J. Stroud, who might be the safe pick, who might be okay, but, you know, some stuff that's come out recently, it's like, don't love that about C.J. Stroud. So I would rather just absolutely swing for the fences with Anthony Richardson.
I think we would all agree that if player X hits their just absolute best-case scenario upside, Anthony Richardson has the absolute best-case scenario upside. Yeah. So, and I found this interesting because one of the conversations we had after he blew up the combine and everyone fell in love with his athletic profile was, yeah, but he completed like 53% of his passes. That's the big but. But our guy Josh pointed this audio out to me. I believe this was this from Todd McShay? We'll hear it in the audio clip. But he pointed out in this audio clip we're about to hear, Todd McShay or whoever it was, forgive me for forgetting off the top of my head. It is Todd McShay? Okay, good. So he pointed out something I thought interesting.
You said it was Todd McShay. Oh, okay, good. And then Josh just immediately shook his head.
Oh, okay, my fault. I'm sorry. Two things at once, the multitasking ability has not been great here. But in this audio we're here, he points out why that completion percentage may be a little bit overblown.
I was watching NFL Live about a week ago, and Shefty is telling you that he believes only one quarterback goes in the top 3, and you weren't buying it, and frankly, I've been on your side. I thought quarterbacks were going to go 1, 2, and 3. What is your sense of this? Diana's telling us the Texans are not looking at a quarterback at 2.
Yeah, I mean, Shefty's the best in the business, so there is a truth to what he's hearing. I look at this class, and I just think it's too talented for teams to pass on it. I'll go to Houston at 2. Number one, I've been on this. Houston should try and trade for Lamar Jackson. You have the picks, and you have the pick, and you have the cap space to do it. If not, let's say that's not an option because Baltimore says no. If I was Houston, I would take Anthony Richardson out of Florida. Two reasons why. Number one, I think the accuracy concerns or narrative around him are incorrect. I've pointed out that 106 teams in college football caught the football better than Florida last year. Ooh. They were horrible. I can go to the Missouri game. There's 3 passes in that game for 40-plus yards that get dropped. So if you took a throwaway, which he had 19 of them last season, and 1 drop per game, 52% completion percentage goes to 63, and now no one has anything to conversate about. Number two, 13 games started. And I understand that. But the reality is this. Athletic quarterbacks that are used in quarterback run, they are allowed to simplify defenses. I think you can ease his learning curve in the NFL because of that. And I want to talk about this game real quick, the Florida State game. Because everybody has kind of hit me up on social media, Dan, go watch the second half of Florida State. He had 9 drops in the second half. Mm. 9 drops in the second half. I look at the physical talent. I go big, fast, strong, athletic. Loose upper body, powerful arm, plenty accurate, highly intelligent, very good work ethic, and great character. How does the young man fail?
First off, I don't know why it can be a positive for Anthony Richardson that he has a loose upper body, but not for somebody like me. I think that's a little unfair. But that, I mean, that's a big number. He throws out the fact that if you take away 1 drop per game, his completion percentage goes, I believe he said, from 53% to like 63%. So... I haven't done the math on it personally, and again, that was Dan Orlovsky, not Todd McShay.
And we've heard on the show, I always agree with everything that Dan Orlovsky says.
Right. So Former Houston Texan.
I am comfortable with this man who, after this segment, went home and then washed himself in a towel that hasn't been washed in like 6 months. I trust what this man has to say.
I trust this man. I mean, so obviously, besides only being a 1-year player, the biggest question for Anthony Richardson was his completion percentage in that 53% number. So RJ, are you buying what Dan Orlovsky put out there? I mean, if you put the blame at the Florida Gators receivers and maybe his true completion percentage is in the mid 60s, does that elevate him to a point where you're no longer concerned about the accuracy and you're comfortable taking him with 2? Because I know in the past you've been a CJ Stroud guy. Are you still sticking with CJ Stroud?
I'm still sticking with CJ Stroud. Anthony Richardson, though, he does intrigue me just because, one, I know who he's being trained by, and I know Denny Thompson is going to get him right for the NFL draft. Secondly, because of what the NFL is, and a lot of quarterbacks that you see, maybe more than half of the quarterbacks you see, are all dual threats. And those are kind of the quarterbacks of the now and also probably of the future in the NFL. You don't want a guy who's going to be a statue and a standstill in the pocket. If it works out with Anthony Richardson, I think that you have a Lamar-type player in the NFL as your quarterback. And if he does not pan out, we're going through this carousel all over again in
at
the
least
NFL
you have
draft.
2 first-round picks the year after.
You have 2 first-round picks the year after. He intrigues me, though, as a prospect.
That's kind of why I'm in the camp of there's no scenario where I would just go, oh, well, I'd rather have the quarterbacks next year. Because we saw this what happened with the Arizona Cardinals, where they took Josh Rosen 1 year, number 10 overall, and like, okay, he's terrible. We got to move on. Very next year, it took Kyler number 1. Now, we'll see how Kyler works out. Let's ignore the players they actually took and just look at the idea of you've got 4 first round picks over these next 2 years, damn near 5 when you talk about having pick 33 this year. So if you miss on a quarterback, it's not unreasonable to me that you could just use one of your other picks and go after another quarterback the very next year. One more scenario we'll quickly get into before going to Cody Stutes, and I think this is probably the scenario that everyone would be most comfortable with. And I should point out, this is from Brendan Donahue of Sharp Football, who, according to the Huddle Report, is the most accurate mock drafter over the last couple years. He has C.J. Stroud at 2, JSN at 12. I think everybody in Houston, if that's the scenario, tell me if I'm wrong, Sean and RJ, but if the picks are Stroud at 2, JSN at 12, everyone's happy at that point, right?
Yeah, everyone's happy. I don't know how it works out, but everyone's happy.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, that's like, it's like, that is the, like, I don't want to say like the square pick, but that is like the, like, yep. That's
you call that the Nick Caserio pick?
No, that's just like what every fantasy football player does. It's like, yeah. I'm just going to get a quarterback and then get the receiver from the same school.
I assume you'd be really happy with that, RJ.
I mean, it seems like it would be chalk. I mean,
Mel Kiper.
Joel Klatt.
Not even close.
Yeah, Joe Klatt just did.
I'm not sure how you got just from Joe Klatt to Todd McShay.
Joe Klatt did the same. Joe Klatt just did the same exact thing where he had C.J. Stroud and JSN. And I think I know defense is a big thing that the Texans have to look at, but you're also looking at the offensive side of the ball. And I think you want some action there as soon as possible with the Houston Texans. So, I would like it. I'd come into the building happy.
Yeah, I would too. And that would be one of the questions I think we throw at Cody Stutes next. So coming up next, more NFL draft scenarios with Cody Stutes. He's going to join us next from the Wheelhouse. ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5 is the Bullpen with Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, and myself, Brian McDonald. Cody Stutes joins us next. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. It's the Bullpen with the producers here at ESPN Radio, Sean Mapes, RJ Saunders, myself, Brian McDonald, and on the line, Cody Stutes from the Wheelhouse, someone I've known, I think, since 2014, back at our days with the flagship. And he joins us now to talk some NFL draft. Of course, the NFL draft starts this Thursday in Kansas City. The Wheelhouse with Cody, Jake Asman, and Brad Kellner will be out in Kansas City Thursday and Friday, so make sure you tune in to those guys to hear all their coverage of the NFL draft and one of the most important drafts in Texans history. Cody, my first question to you today, and again, thank you for joining us. It feels like the fan base has been pretty split from listening to your show and other shows here on the station. You have people call in and try to play the line of defense wins championships. You have people call in and try to play the line of, well, the quarterbacks are better next year. What would you say to the people who don't want to take a quarterback or two, instead draft defense or wait till next year for a quarterback?
I would simply say to those people, when do you want to win? Because if you never want to win, then you can kick in the can down the road. This was a really bad Texans team in 2022, and you don't even have the top pick in 2023. Well, most of us believe in D'Amico Ryans. Most of us believe Nick Caserio's had his best free agency crop since then, and you're adding 12 players, at least a few, you know, 8, 9, even if they don't make all the picks, you're adding talented players to the roster. So you're not going to be in a position to draft one of the top two quarterbacks in next year's draft. And I hear this conversation so often, well, you've got draft capital next year. You've got draft capital next year. Yeah, but just because you have draft capital doesn't mean that whoever's picking one or two has to sell you the pick for that draft capital. If the Commanders are picking one, I don't care how many first-round picks you have, they're not trading you the pick. If the Falcons are picking two, I don't care how many first-round picks you have, they're not trading you the pick. So when you find yourself with an opportunity to solidify the quarterback spot and to take that chance, I feel like you need to take that swing. And if it doesn't work, it's easier than ever to move on from the quarterback spot in the NFL than it is ever been. Josh Rosen after 1 year. Zach Wilson's not the starter in New York after 2 years. Now, by the way, he didn't even play two full seasons, okay, because he had injury effect last season for him. It's easy to move on from quarterbacks, but you don't always have the opportunity to get the top of the class, of a quarterback class. So take the swing, get after it, and start going down that path. And don't you believe the coaching staff, if you're the Texans, believe in Bobby Slowick, Gerard Johnson, and then ultimately D'Amico Ryans as the head coach to coach these guys up and get something out of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Cody. The last day or two, really, Will Levis in Vegas has shot up the board as far as likelihood to be the second pick. A, do you think that means the Texans are actually going to pick him? Do you think that's going to be a Texans draft, perhaps? And how would you react if the Texans call Will Levis's name next week?
I definitely believe the Texans are interested in Will Levis. I definitely believe that he would be the guy that they'd be interested in if indeed Bryce Young is off the board. I still believe there's an outside chance that C.J. Stroud's the top overall pick, and if he is, then Bryce Young's the number two pick. It's my understanding that he's the top player on the Texans' board, so if he's available there at two, the Texans are going to take him. But if he's not, there's a lot of reasons to explain why Will Levis would be the selection for the Houston Texans instead of C.J. Stroud. Levis played in the SEC. Caserio has clearly valued the SEC as the place for you to compete. In 2021 and 2022, Levis didn't play with a lot of future NFL players. C.J. Stroud did. I mean, Stroud's played with, at this point, he's going to play with four first-round wide receivers, a first-round tackle, a second-round tackle, a third-round center, and a couple of guards who eventually are going to be first two-day picks. So he's played with a lot of different players. Levis is going to end up playing with, I think, three or four NFL guys when it's all said and done from his time at Kentucky. And I kept going back to something Fiché said in, I think, November. Will Levis has one of the cleanest off-the-field profiles of any quarterback that McShay has ever scouted. He said you not find one person in Will Levis's life that says he's not a good dude, he doesn't work hard. So you factor in all those things, Caserio's history, some of the off-the-field profile of Will Levis, and it feels very much like a Texans pick. Look, you can talk me into 2021 Will Levis, where he had some really nice performances and he did pretty well. But 2022 was atrocious. Even when he had time, he was making poor decisions. I don't love the Will Levis selection. I like C.J. Stroud more. I don't like defense more than Will Levis. I very much believe by the time three's on the clock, the Texans need to have a quarterback. But in my quarterback hierarchy, Levis is third behind Stroud and Young and slightly ahead of Anthony Richardson. And how will I feel? Well, I'm not going to be excited about it. But it's more exciting to have a quarterback than to not have a quarterback when number three's on the clock. So it's better than defense, and it's probably better than trading, because if you trade, it becomes hard to figure out how you get the quarterback.
So in Jacksonville, when Trevor Lawrence was at Clemson, it was important just to get to the race to number one, and it was what a lot of people would call in Duval County one of the most important drafts in teams, you know, in the team's history. For you, Cody, being in the city of Houston, with the Texans, how important is this draft for them compared to the previous years here in the city?
That's actually a great question, RJ, because I've long thought at different times, what's the most important draft in the history of this franchise? And they become the most important draft for a moment, but ultimately you find out many years down the road that maybe it wasn't. 2006 was obviously enormous for this organization, and they passed on a quarterback and ultimately ended up with Mario Williams, and it looked like that was the right pick based on how Reggie Bush and Vince Young it turned out. And then you look at 2014, again, it took a defensive lineman, passed on the quarterback, right pick again, because Blake Bortles wasn't very good and Johnny Manziel was horrific. But should they have maybe drafted Jimmy Garoppolo instead of Xavier Suofilo, or Derek Carr instead of Xavier Suofilo? They had an opportunity to improve the quarterback spot, but Bill O'Brien didn't want to make that investment. Well, that was the first year of Bill O'Brien, so it was a little bit easier to understand. This is the most important draft in the history of the franchise. You have multiple first-round selections. You've got an opportunity to take one of the top quarterbacks in the draft, and you're at a inflection point with a general manager where, depending on how he operates, it could be very hard or very easy to criticize what he does. Because the more unconventional Nick Caserio gets with the selections on draft day, the easier it becomes to criticize him, the more avenues where you can go about criticizing him. For instance, a selection of Will Levis at two, compare Bryce Young because you didn't get the number one overall pick, you compare C.J. Stroud because you passed on him, and you compare Anthony Richardson to Will Levis. A selection of a defensive player, you compare all four first-round quarterbacks to him. So the more unconventional Caserio gets, the more ways he opens himself up to criticism. And if you're talking about a draft that might look so poor at the end of a year, and at the end of a football calendar year, that you might be thinking about a new general manager, that's a pretty important draft. Or this general manager puts his cojones on the table, makes his selections, nails it, and sets you up for many years. Like, this is by far one of the most important drafts we've seen in recent memory when it comes to the NFL, when you're just talking about the individuality of a franchise. And as far as the Texans go, the most important draft in franchise history.
Cody Stoops from the Wheelhouse joining us here on the Bullpen again. The Wheelhouse will be out in Kansas City for the NFL draft this Thursday and Friday. Cody, I think we're all hoping they take a quarterback at two, but then the question becomes, how do they follow that up with the 12th pick and the 33rd overall pick, the pick there in the second round? I've been in the camp of I would like to see them fully attack offense, take maybe JSN at 12, and then see what's there in the second round, whether it be at one of these tight ends, which it seems like to be a pretty deep class this year, or maybe it's that second, third-tier wide receiver. Whoever falls there, if it's Jalen Hyatt, Josh Downs, whoever it happens to be. Because when you look at some of the best offenses in the league and the teams that are getting to the Super Bowl and winning Super Bowls, you have teams like the Bengals with multiple high-end targets with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. The Bucs winning a Super Bowl a couple years ago with multiple high-end targets like Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Of course, the Chiefs the year before with Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. Are you in the camp of maybe going defense at 12 or 33, or where do you fall on that as far as how to attack the picks at 12 and 33?
I've got kind of a different approach based on what they do with number two. C.J. Stroud's selection, that I definitely want them to get Jackson Smith and Jigba at 12, create some high-powered offense, hopefully in the next couple of years. And Jackson Smith and Jigba obviously know Stroud from their time at Ohio State and start putting really good offensive players around C.J. Stroud. That's how he won at Ohio State. So put some really high-powered offensive players around him, and then you have that 33rd overall selection as well as your other capital on day two if you want to invest in the defense, or if you see a defender you love that starts to slip and you want to jump up and go get him, then you've got the ability to move around and go get him. And if it's a Will Levis situation at two, I would, again, feel like you really need to go offense, but I would almost believe that the Texans would probably go defense if they stick and pick at two, grab Will Levis. I would think defense is probably the way they would go at 12, and then you add an offensive player or maybe best player available on the board at 33. I like quarterback and pass rusher is what I want the first two picks to be, and hopefully it's in that order. And then the third selection, I want it to be wide receiver. So QB, pass rusher, and wide receiver is my top three preference, and that's what I want 212 and 33 to be used on. And then after that, have some fun. Move around in the second round if one of these tight ends starts to slip, or go find a center on day two if you feel like you absolutely need to have that guy and you're comfortable with a young guy taking over that spot. There's a bunch of different things you can do. This tight end class is about six or seven guys deep at the top as guys that could easily in a year or two be the top guy. They don't have to be ready right away because you have Dalton Schultz. So quarterback, pass rusher, wide receiver, that's my preference for the first three picks. And then start filing in some solid offensive players. And I'd take another wide receiver later in the draft, and I'd take another running back just to have a young guy on the depth chart at the running back spot.
Cody Stoots from the Wheelhouse with us. And Cody, like we said at the top, the Wheelhouse will be in Kansas City for the draft Thursday and Friday, doing shows from Kansas City. And I already know you scouted all the possible targets for the Houston Texans. Have you scouted some barbecue joints in Kansas City already?
So I went hands off on this. This is Brad Kellner's job. This is BK's job. BK, is from, I guess, grew up there, or not grew up there, but was born there and had some experience going back there quite a bit. So he's got the scouting report. And really, I'm sitting back as sort of the head coach. I'm going to let him make the picks, and then I'm going to attack the barbecue, and then I'm going to let him know how he did. That's kind of my move when we're in Kansas City. So it's going to be a blast. A big thank you to 1800 Tequila for sending us out there. Kansas City and taking care of all our draft coverage. Of course, the local broadcast at the party at Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage is going to be a fantastic one, so you don't want to miss that chance to win a giant TV thanks to Audiovisual Consultations. So don't miss out on that. But yeah, BK's, he's calling the plays. I just run the plays. And then if they're bad, I'll trash them at the press conference after.
I was going to say, it's like the Bill Parcells line. You're not buying the groceries, not even cooking the meal, but you're just eating the meal is what sounds like your role is.
Yeah, eating the meal is sort of my preference.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just glad you're trusting BK, who notoriously eats two dinners every night, and you're not trusting Andrew Carlson with the food recommendations because you have a lot of boiled chicken out there. All right, Cody Stoots, thanks for joining us, man. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Anytime. You guys do a fantastic job. Appreciate you.
All right, that's Cody Stews from The Wheelhouse again. The Wheelhouse will be out in Kansas City for the NFL draft this Thursday and Friday, thanks to 1800 Tequila. Make sure to listen to their coverage Thursday and Friday as they bring you all the latest from Kansas City and have lots of reactions to whatever the Texans do with their picks on Thursday and Friday. So coming up next, we're gonna take a little bit of a left turn here, go from the NFL draft over to the NBA and the Rockets. Will the Rockets make the playoffs next season? That would certainly be a bold prediction. But one Houston Rockets star player actually did guarantee just that. We'll tell you who and discuss if he's crazy. Next in the bullpen with Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, and RJ Saunders, live on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.